gave this land to me, this brave and ancient land to me. And when the morning sun reveals her hills and plains, then I see a land where children can run free. So take my hand and walk this land with me, and walk.
Well, good evening and welcome to Yada Yada. My pleasure to be with you. We have both Kirk and JB with us this evening. And Kirk, Terry has had a much better week, appears to be on the mend. So this is very good news.
Yes, it is. Thank you.
Well, we're glad to have you this week.
Definitely.
Hey, you know, we've had, of course, an interesting week politically. Israel is headed to its third election now in less than a year. Bibi Netanyahu has been indicted on bribery charges. We've shared this before. I have good news and bad news as it relates to Israel. The bad news, of course, is that they don't have a constitution. What they have is a memorandum of understanding that essentially shares the governance of that country with the secular and the religious and the sectarian. And the formation of the country basically established Judaism as the only state religion. I think that was a tragic mistake. Because while Jews, Yehudim, are Yahweh's chosen people, Judaism is probably his most despised religion. And so as long as Israel is a blend of secular and religious lies, it can never be Yah's home. It can never be reconciled with Yahweh. These things must change. The second is that, listen, I am no Netanyahu fan. Occasionally, a man says some things that are astonishingly appropriate, like he gave a whole speech at one time on the myth of the fakestinians. But this notion that he should be indicted and convicted for bribery when the charges against him are pink champagne and cigars is so preposterous that it's evident that Israel is self-loathing and would kill its own for no purpose. And it is, I read an article the other day, two actually, one that spoke of how this is really an extraordinary time for Israel because Trump is willing to sign executive orders that no other president has been willing to do, acknowledging that the Golan Heights is part of Israel, actually moving the capital to Jerusalem. These are the embassy. These are extraordinary kinds of things. And yet, at the same time, of course, Trump sells billions of dollars of weapons and defends Saudi Arabia, which is insane. So it's just a fascinating period of time to see all that is happening here, particularly as the world has moved away from, ever so slightly, the realization that if you just go from around 1960 to about 2015, 99% of the world's terrorist atrocities were perpetrated by fundamentalist Muslims. That is no longer the case. At this point, yes, you see actions like what happened in the Air Force facility in Florida, where the Muslim shot up a bunch of American servicemen and women, killing them, which are acts of Islamic jihad. But you're seeing an equal amount of right-wing neo-Nazis. The Jewish delicatessen. I was talking with Kirk before the program and said, all right, you know, there isn't a news agency that seems capable of understanding the motive. They say the motive is still not clear. All right, it was a right-wing conspiratorial wacko with a manifesto against Jews that went into a Jewish delicatessen and began shooting. That is like spotting someone with the C and the T and asking them to spell cat and them failing to do so. It's astonishingly how stupid political correctness has caused those to be who were influenced by it. Foremost among them, of course, would be people formerly considered to be journalists. And what is so fascinating is that now at the far left, Trump just signed another executive order this week, specifically targeting the Boycott Israel movement that has become so vicious on America's universities, where it's difficult even to be a Jew and go to college these days. And he has passed or signed legislation that says that, you know, that's not going to be tolerated. And yet at the far left, among professors, among student organizations on the liberal left, and of course, you look at the Liberal Party and Labour Party and the UK, the candidate that was leading them is an overt anti-Semite. Now, the left is as crazed, as is insane, and is as anti-Semitic now as is the conspiratorial right. And so the most liberal 20 to 30% of the world and the most conservative 20 to 30% of the world are two sides of a vice that are closing in on Jews, while at the same time, the two largest religions, Islam and Christianity, are squeezing Israel from opposite sides. It is easy to see why Yahweh says, you need to come out of Babylon.
No joke.
Otherwise, I can't protect you. I'm not going to protect you. So it is really a fascinating time. The other thing I want to talk about just briefly is that I've spent the last 2 to 3 weeks translating Mizmor's 9, 10, and 11. That's a long way from where we are now. We're in 89, and we're going to spend a considerable amount of time excoriating the Roman Catholic Church, the Christian New Testament, and particularly Paul, both his speeches and letters, before we reach Mizmor's 9, 10, and 11. But the point that I wanted to make is that having completed that next chapter, a couple of things are obvious. One is that the myth of replacement theology of God granting or God substituting the Gentile church for Yehuda and Israel on his promises is absolutely ludicrous based upon what he's has revealed in Mizmors 9, 10, 11. And also, if you were to take the most controversial, least popular conclusions that I've come to over these past 18 years, every one of them is affirmed by God himself in Mizmors 9, 10, and 11. You know, foremost among them is that Yahweh's name is the single most important thing that we need to know, embrace, and declare if we intend to have a relationship with him. And second to that, there's only one thing that matters when it comes to God. Tzedakah, being right. That's it. That's what matters. You need to be right. And that those three topics, this the myth that Gentiles have somehow replaced Jews, that Yahweh's name is somehow unimportant, and that God is knowable in a way other than being right. Piercing those myths, proving the opposite is true, is the purpose of those mizmors. So, you know, I speak to you even more confidently, even more bluntly than ever before. You know, it is one thing for us to deduce it. Things like, for example, hate. I began Observations for Our Time, the first sentence of the first volume, the first sentence of the first paragraph of the first chapter of the first volume began with hate is a virtue. And in Mizmors 9, 10, 11, Yahweh affirms that reality, that until we know what to hate and how to hate, we're incapable of genuine love. So there are the places we're going to go are truly amazing. And where we are now is in the 89th Mizmor. The 89th Mizmor is definitive. It is the final straw in the case for Dodd and against the Christian myth of Jesus. And we're now at 89:38, and it in and of itself completely destroys any possibility that there was a Jesus Christ and that Jesus is the Messiah. This is what it reads. Now, mind you, the 89th Mizmor Psalm only mentions one name other than Yahweh's. Dodes, his name is mentioned three times. It opens speaking about Dodd. It closes speaking about Dodd. The entire Mizmor is about Dodd. This is what the 38th statement reads. But now I have refused to accept. You have rejected by diminishing the merit of, even over time becoming adverse to, your Messiah. Improperly and on your own initiative, meddling, while presumptuously passing over any association with him. Guys, the words here are pretty straightforward. I can't imagine that even in the Christian translations, that they can miss any of this.
No, and they really didn't. I looked.
And of course, you got a real problem here because this doesn't work for Christianity. They haven't passed over their supposed Messiah. They trip all over it. But Jesus isn't the subject of this. Don't. And so the Messiah that the world at large has missed is Dode. So how do they deal with this? This statement by itself negates the basis of their religion. Kirk, I know that you spent some time trying to study this.
I read a couple hours of commentary from all different sources, from Spurgeon, which goes back almost 100 years, I guess, till today's commentators, and most of it's double talk. Most of it, it's kind of like, as I think about it now, it's kind of like Dode becomes a placeholder for their Christ, you know. And as long as they have that concept and they can sell it to you, then he can be. You can say anything you want about what he is because he's only holding the spot till Jesus comes.
Yeah, and of course, what's really interesting. What's really interesting about that is that it makes Yahweh out to be a liar because Yahweh says the promises he made to Dode are everlasting. Mm-hmm. So it makes God out to be a liar, and why would you trust a lying God? It makes God out to be a nincompoop because he obviously knows Dode's name, but he doesn't seem to know Yosha's name.
Yeah.
You know, why would he write all these prophecies, and speaking of Dode, if he meant them to be of Yosha.
Yeah, right.
And what kind of an idiot would do that? And third is, that's really interesting, is that, they look at Dode as being the prototype, as being the placeholder for their Jesus. And, well, he's not just the prototype. He's not just the placeholder. He's the real deal.
Yeah.
He's the one. He is everything that Jesus is not.
Yeah, it's everything they want Jesus to be.
Everything they want Jesus to be, Dode actually is. So why not just accept God's choice?
Because they don't go where the words lead.
Yahweh said, "He is my choice. He's the chosen one." No, if you're going to set somebody apart to study, why don't you consider the one that Yahweh said, he is the set apart one. If you want to be shepherded, why don't you just accept the one that Yahweh said, he is my shepherd. If you want to have a king, why not go with the one that Yahweh said is not only my chosen king, but the King of Kings? If you really want to have a Messiah, why not accept the Messiah that Yahweh anointed? If you want to benefit from the words of a prophet, why not study the words that Yahweh's prophet Dode wrote? If you would like to benefit from knowing the Son of God, why not come to know the man that Yahweh called his son?
So it's simple. People prefer Paul over Dode because people, by and large, are stupid and want to be told what to do. Dode told people how to understand Yahweh's word.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Paul told people what to do. People want to be told what to do. People are ignorant and stupid and want to be told, what do I need to do to go to heaven? That's all they really care about. They don't care about understanding who God is, understanding what heaven's about. They just want to know, how do I go to heaven because I'm afraid of hell.
Okay, JB, I'm. Can I play devil's advocate with that for a moment?
Okay.
I don't get it. I don't get it.
Oh, I don't either.
when somebody tells me what to do and what I can and can't do, man, you should see my expression. I had a guy today tell me I couldn't do something. I'm going to tell you, he is really sorry that he brought that topic up. Now, I end up having a very pleasant conversation with him, but I was very direct as how inappropriate his demands were and told him that under no circumstances would I adhere to them. You tell me what to do, and you're going to get an earful. I don't want to be told what to do. I crave freedom. Crave it. I love volition. So being told what to do, oh, I think it's the most irritating thing in the world.
And I think most that are part of Yah's family feel that same way.
But so it's hard to understand the religious perspective of wanting to be told what to do. Now, the other part
but
of
it is... I've talked to so many people, and when you try and explain it to them, they're like, well, what do I need to do? You need to understand. Well, what should I do? Yeah, they don't want to sit down, think about it. You know, they don't want to have to think about it, try and figure it out and understand it. They just want to
okay,
be told,
think, okay.
You know, go to church on Sunday. Celebrate Christmas. Celebrate Easter.
Okay. Let me challenge that again. Isn't Christianity the religion of you don't have to do anything, just believe? That
yes.
Salvation is a gift of God and not a result of works? Isn't that what Paul wrote?
Mm-hmm.
So why are
but
they so fixated
gave them a list
on what
to
do
and not
if
do.
Their goddamn religion is based on not doing anything? Are they unable
well, they
to see hypocrisy? But it's totally hypocritical. You got a religion that says you don't have to do diddly squat. Just believe. Salvation through faith and not of works. That's the Pauline mantra. So why are they asking, what do I need to do?
Now, by the same token, though, Paul gave them a list of things to not do and things to do.
I know, because Paul was a
complete
hypocrite.
They like having the safety net of going, well, I fell short of what I was supposed to do, but, you know, I have faith, so God will forgive me.
Oh, of course. And now the other side is...
Basically, it comes down to, by and large, people are stupid.
Yeah. The other part of it is, of all of the endeavors in life, the single most enjoyable, enriching, uplifting, empowering is that which leads to understanding. And if you can understand something that's important, I mean, I enjoy understanding little stuff. But understanding who God is, what he's offering, what he expects in return, understanding the reason we exist, where we're going, how we're going to get there, there's nothing that compares to that.
Mm-hmm.
You know, today I had a couple of errands to run, and I hated the idea of even getting out of this chair to do them because it was so much fun expanding the knowledge and understanding that I gain about Yahweh by translating and commenting on Dode's Mizmor. So I'm sorry, JB. I understand what you. I mean, I heard what you said. I don't get it.
I can't relate to it. Like I said, I know it is a fact. I cannot relate to it. It's not in my character. It's not in my mindset.
Yeah,
but
when Yahweh says
the mindset of most people I know.
Yeah. When Yahweh says, but now you have refused to accept. And you have rejected by diminishing the merit of, even over time becoming adverse to your Messiah, improperly and on your own initiative, meddling while presumptively passing over any association with him. When I read that, I want to scream, how can you be so stupid, Christians? You carry the 89th Psalm around in your Bible, and yet you can't process what it says. The end of your book is a complete contradiction to the beginning. And I got news for you.
Don't read
the end of the
beginning.
Book isn't even 1% reliable, and the beginning is 100% reliable.
facts.
One of the greatest mistakes that Jews, Christians, and Muslims have made is inappropriately, inaccurately designating, appreciating, accepting the true Messiah. You know, the Mashiach, the Messiah, is dead. And anyone who is adverse to that is not only passing over an association with Dod, but one with Yahweh.
Mm-hmm.
It is impossible to be opposed to Dod and be accepted by Yahweh. Now, this is an extraordinary statement. God has affirmed this profound truth so many times and ways, it's befuddling that as few as 1 in a million Yehudim acknowledge him, Dod, as such, and that 5 billion Goyim bequeath the Greek variation of this title to another. After enduring 2,000 years of harassment for failing to accept Jesus as their Messiah, turns out Jews were correct. Now it's time to take the next step and recognize the Mashiach for who he truly is, so that the family can be restored. You know, the number one reason that many Yehudim did not accept Yehoshua as their Mashiach is that he did not meet the criterion of Mashiach as explained by Yahweh. Foremost among his failings in this regard, he was not a Gibor. Simple as that. A Gibor is a fighter. A Gibor is one who battles. A Gibor is one who will stand up and forcefully protect his people. Yehoshua didn't do that. Dod did. Beyond that, it's the simplest of all realizations. Yehoshua was sacrificed as the Passover lamb on Passover. The Mashiach is not sacrificed. The Mashiach is not the sacrificial lamb. And it's for damn sure that the Passover lamb isn't resurrected. Oh, that would be something, wouldn't it? We're going to substitute your death for this lamb, which is going to nourish you, which you're going to kill this lamb in a certain way and then cook it in a certain way to feed your family. And oh, by the way, the miracle is not that you get to live, but that the lamb gets to live. Oh, but isn't that the whole story of the Christian resurrection? A Passover lamb comes back to life?
Yeah.
It's so pathetic. So if you were a descendant of Jacob or Dod, pause and reflect upon this. Much of what religious and secular Jews have claimed regarding Dod, David, and have alleged on behalf of the Christian Christ is untrue. It's upended and reversed. Accept the realization that Dod, David, is the Mashiach Messiah. Don't pass over him, Zabar, the basis of Passover, in an ill-conceived attempt to give Yehoshua, Jesus, the Lamb, what the shepherd is due. Do not pass over him in an ill-conceived attempt to give Yehoshua, the lamb, what the shepherd is due. I once made this mistake, and so have many of you.
Oh, yeah.
And Yehudim have been plagued over the centuries by those who believe that Christ is the Messiah and blame Jews for killing him. Turns out there never was any rational basis for a Messiah named Jesus Christ. No basis for the religion of Christianity. None for a New Testament or for calling oneself a Christian. It's all negated by Mizmor Psalm 89:38. Sometimes, however, mistakes, especially little ones, if they are corrected, can lead us to the truth. The first time I read Mizmor 89:39, I errantly attributed your to Yahweh rather than to Yisrael. The reason was simple enough, since your is now consistently presented as second person masculine singular. Yeah, so I had thought that Yah was now admonishing Dode, which, after all of this, was so incongruent with the rest of the psalm. Of course, now that we have more correctly and completely translated each of these three verbs in the foregoing statement, it's obvious that your is consistently directed towards those who have refused to accept Dode, those who have diminished his merit by improperly meddling where they should have left good enough alone. Yet it is in that initial error that prompted me to return to 2 Samuel 7 in hopes of understanding this transition from the benefits to the consequences. And even there, 18 years ago, as I attempted to correct the obvious mistake found in every English Bible translation, and this is where it began 18 years ago, my efforts were incomplete, with the remaining conflicts tugging away at my conscience until the morning when the proper perspective finally resolved everything. I know we, some time ago now, went back to where it all began, 2 Samuel 7. And we found that while Asher was correctly rendered when sin is associated with him, I will not spare the discipline, we finally figured out that none of it, not a word of it, was prophetic of Yosha. Didn't mention his name. Didn't speak about him. Wasn't about him. It mentions Dode's name. Spoke directly of Dode. And the whole thing from beginning to end was about Dode. Every word of it true regarding him. And so we learned a great deal. You know, it's part of growing, of correcting one's errors along the way. Second only to removing Yahweh's name 7,000 times from his testimony in the Torah, Nabi, and Mizmor, and replacing it with the adversary's name and title of the Lord. This error in judgment, this lapse of character, has caused more harm to Yehudim, Jews, than any other. They ought not have been looking to the future for a Messiah. Not one to liberate them nor save them, when he had already been the single most prominent and protective man in their history. Yosha's name would not have been changed to Jesus Christ, and Christianity's New Testament would have been stillborn had the actual identity and purpose of Yahweh's Messiah been known. If Yahweh's name and the identity of his beloved Son and Messiah been known, Christianity would never have been born. Stunning, isn't it? But it's true. Jews are to blame for Christianity being conceived in their midst because they simply didn't accept Yahweh's name or Dodd as their Messiah. I'm sorry, but that's true. But it is a reversible problem. Not for those who have gone and died, but for those who are still alive. And that it has been noted by Yahweh, let's affirm a heartbreaking reality. Jews have been their own worst enemy. The hit patel stem modifying a bar, which means to pass over, by improperly and on your own initiative meddling where, while presumptuously passing over your Messiah, proves it. This extraordinarily uncommon stem reveals that the religious have unjustifiably passed right over him, somehow displeased with his affairs, all while acting on their own initiative and thus not on God's. Equally telling, a bar is the basis of Pesach and thus Passover, equating the rejection of the Messiah with foregoing the purpose of the Mikra Pesach. On behalf of Yehuda and Yisrael, even the Goyim who are listening, accept and embrace the beloved Messiah and Melech as your brother and as God's son, even as your shepherd. Listen to Yahweh's Bachar, chosen one, the Kodash, set apart one of Yisrael, and concur with him, because when it comes to God, Dodd is right. The 11th Mizmor Psalm that I finished translating earlier today is a referendum between two words, Rasha and Tzedak. And from God's point of view, the Gentile world, its nations, its individuals, and its institutions are Rasha. They're wrong. And for those who are wrong, it's either death or eternal incarceration. The only means, and this is what was just so stunning, the means that Yahweh prescribed to earn his love and appear in his presence is tzedak, being right. And the means to an eternity in Sheol, to incarceration in a prison whose very bars are made of burning light, is Rasha, being wrong. When it comes to God, Dodd is right. If you're a Christian, stop pretending to follow Jesus Christ. For God's sake, was Torah observant and you're not. And start paying attention to Yahweh's Zeruah. Remove the stigma of the errant title Christian. Reject Shaul and accept Dodd. It really is that simple. As for religious Jews, it is a perplexing irony, isn't it? Wearing black and bobbing their heads up and down as if to shake some sense into themselves or what little remains out of them. In Minyans, they recite Dodd's Mizmor from rote directly into the stones of Herod's wall. If only they would consider what he had to say instead. If only their heads were not as hard as the Edomites' wall, some of what they recite might actually penetrate their thick skulls. But at last, it's not to be. Dodd's Mizmor and Yahweh's Dabar are for the unreligious. Now, it wouldn't take long for what follows to occur. From the fall from Dodd was swift, with Solomon beginning well, but soon capitulating to accommodate the religious interest of his wives and concubines. Did you know that's what caused Solomon to fall?
Sure.
Yeah. His wives and concubines, yeah, were religious. They weren't into Judaism. They were into the pagan religions. Yeah, other people's around that. And so, Dod wanted to please the girls.
Mm-hmm. You mean Solomon wanted to please the girls?
Yeah. So, those who have been beguiled by Shaul Paul into believing a new covenant are somewhat like them. This is what it reads. This is Mizmor 89:39. You have repudiated and renounced the covenant with your coworker, dishonoring and defiling his dedication and preparation, even his consecration and crown. You know, I think I mentioned it last week, was driving around here. I'm on St. Thomas right at the moment. It kind of bothers me even to hear St. Thomas, but nonetheless, that's where I am. And one of the depictions here was of inspirational people, and they had a black Jesus wearing a crown of thorns. What a swell way to depict your God, tortured. I mean, it's just... shake your head. That's what you're going to do. So we're going to have your God wearing a crown of thorns. Good for you. Did Jesus actually ever wear a crown? Was he ever consecrated with a crown?
No.
Mm-mm.
No.
Nope. It's Jews and Christians alike, however, that have repudiated and renounced the covenant. Far more Christians have renounced the covenant than have Jews, however.
There's so many of them. My God.
Yeah. Yep.
They're going to have babies.
Yep. Now, if this were speaking of Jebus, which of course it's not, would God refer to Jebus as your coworker?
No.
There any chance that could occur? No. But he could refer to Dod as your coworker.
Yeah, look at all he wrote. Look at all he did.
Yep. Yep.
Of course.
Yeah. Dishonoring and defiling his dedication and preparation, even his consecration and crown. Now, Dod was far from perfect, but man, that guy was dedicated, and he was prepared. You can't write what he wrote without being devoted and prepared. Heck, you know, I spend 8 to 10 hours a day, 6 days a week, and have for most of the past 18 years doing this, and I can't even come close. But I'm certainly devoted by any means. I mean, that's devotion.
I would say so.
And I'm prepared. I take the time. I am prepared. I'm capable of translating the 89th Psalm. I'm capable of commenting on it with the devotion and preparation. But I could no more write it than I just can't. But Dod was prepared and devoted to the extent that he could, although the 89th Psalm he did not write. It was written by the wisest man of the of his age, about him. Yeah, about him. In repudiation of Yahweh's declaration by claiming that there's a new covenant and thus a new testament, the advocates for replacement, are renouncing their affiliation with the former. And since Yah only has one covenant and it is everlasting, repudiating it is a deadly proposition. It says you have repudiated and renounced the covenant. No. When you create a New Testament based upon a new covenant, then you've repudiated the old one. It's that old one. It doesn't pertain to us. Good for you. And it is an old one. It just so happens to be the only one.
That's my new name for OT is only one, only testament.
Yeah, only one. Yeah, it's the only one. And, you know, those who say, oh, that's not true, look at Jeremiah 31.
Yeah, well, you know that one.
Yeah, well, okay. Why don't you read it to me? Let's just start right at the beginning and you read it to me. And when it comes to the part that says that this is for Yisrael and Yehuda, why don't you explain to me how that can pertain to a Gentile church? Oops. Why don't you then explain why the word Kodesh means to renew and reaffirm as opposed to new? All right. Now, after we've done those two things, then why don't you explain to me why the only difference between the existing covenant and its affirmation, its renewal, is that Yahweh's name is written upon us and his Torah is placed inside of us. If you've got a new covenant and a new testament that is totally and completely adversarial to the Torah, how is it possible that God says that the renewal of his covenant is based upon the incorporation of the Torah? If you've got a God that you name Jesus Christ, how could Yahweh's name be written inside of those and upon those who benefit from the reaffirmation of the covenant? I mean, it strikes me that if you're a Christian and you're basing your hope of a New Testament and a new covenant based upon Yahweh or Yirmiyah 31, you not only struck out, you got four strikes. There wasn't a ball among them. It was a swing and a miss four times in a row.
Not even a fair fight.
No, and then what is so astounding about the Christian is that you can show this to them. I mean, what I've just shared is irrefutable. That's what the words say. Irrefutable. You show that to them and they can't process it. They'll come up with another excuse. And that's why it's a waste of time debating one. Why? If you can show them that they're wrong based upon what God actually said and they're unable to admit it, to process it, to accept it, what's the purpose? To go on to their next point where they're wrong?
To be religious is to be either irrational or ignorant.
Ignorant.
You can fix ignorant, but you can't fix irrational. And that's the problem.
That is correct.
Most of them start off as ignorant, but once you start trying to fix ignorant, they become irrational.
I make a pejorative statement that is nonetheless true. You can fix a lot of things, but you can't fix stupid.
Mm-hmm.
Yep.
What I don't understand, and I don't think Yah does either, with the conditions of his covenant so liberating and uplifting, with the benefits so enriching and empowering, with him providing or proving, literally proving that his promises are reliable, why disavow and replace what God is offering with a human construct? Not only is the Christian replacement inferior and that it only offers forgiveness and eternal life, where Yahweh is offering eternal life, perfection, adoption into his family, enrichment and empowerment. And he can actually deliver on all of those things. And all Christianity has is salvation and eternal life.
Empty promises.
Yeah, that are vain promises. Why would anybody forego one for the other?
Don't you have to be a con man and know you're a con man to do this?
Well, according
to
yeah,
or something, you just have to.
And in the Mizmors 9, 10, and 11, God makes it clear that the Rasha of Gentiles is premeditated.
Yeah.
That they know it. That's been my experience.
They have to know it.
Yeah, they know it. And don't care. That's why they're going to be held accountable.
They don't believe it, so they just say, one lie is as good as another one. I can make money on this one.
Yep. Now, God is really clear that hate is important, and that so is accountability. And he's going to judge and condemn and incarcerate prominent individuals throughout history. Every pope, every cleric, every political leader, all of them. Hell's going to be a very political and religious place. If you're an advocate of these things. Yeah, my guess is it'll be filled with Christmas trees.
Yes, funny sense of humor.
Yeah. Not only is the Christian replacement inferior, it is unsupported by God, who through his own covenant is offering so much more. While the Christian replacement has but one requirement, believe, this is about as useful as hoping that Zeus will give you a ride on his unicorn. And quite frankly, the conditions of God's covenant are added benefits. Why claim to worship a God whose family you have disowned and disavowed? You know, what's the point? Why would you want to be part of God's family if his family is comprised of people that you hate?
There's an obstacle.
Everything of value to Yahweh and cherished by him is set apart and thus uncommon. Nothing is further from God than that which is commonplace. What is more common than religion and government? By virtue of its popularity alone, the new covenant is a non-starter. For those who may be protesting, saying that they haven't repudiated Dode because they honor David by having chosen to fly a flag with his star, may I suggest that and challenge that assumption by categorically stating there never was a Star of David? And David isn't his name? Creating a false caricature of a man in this manner degrades his authentic nature. It is akin to alleging that Cinderella Yepperson, instead of Thomas Jefferson, was essential to the French Revolution because he drew popular cartoons rather than authoring the Declaration of Independence, or that Thomas Jefferson's insights on limiting the influence of government and religion while disavowing central banks and established militaries should not be considered because he owned slaves and had sexual relations with one of them. It's akin to calling Yosha Jesus Christ and then modeling the resulting caricature after Dionysus. It's ignorant. It's irrational. Further, for Christians, Nazar, dedicated and prepared, is the basis of Nazarite. It was upon a corruption of this term that the Roman Catholic Church coined the phrase Jesus of Nazareth. As a matter of fact, there's a Jesus of Nazareth in the fraudulent book of Matthew. Now, it basically says that Jesus of Nazareth in the book of Matthew. What that does is prove that the book of Matthew was written somewhere around, well, that section of it was written somewhere around 350 CE. We're not talking about written in the, like, 35 CE contemporaneous with the events, or 40 CE shortly thereafter, or 50 CE still possibly by one of the disciples, or even 60 CE at the end of the life of one of the disciples. No. There was no Nazareth until around 300 CE, which is when that section had to be written. It's a complete and utter farce created by the ultimate beast, the Roman Catholic Church. Isn't that interesting?
Terribly, but...
Yeah. Nazareth did exist during Yosha's lifetime. So he could not have been from the mythical location. And yet, as in all things misappropriated by Christians, there actually is a Nezer connection with Dode because he is the branch. Now, a little explanation may be helpful as we consider the next tape. The sheepfold, whose walls have been torn down, represents the barriers around the covenant, which were designed to keep the religious, political, conspiratorial, and ignorant out. And that's hard for people to process because we've been indoctrinated in a culture brewed in religious concepts, steeped in religious concepts. And yeah, the God of the open arms, the God of that is all accepting, the God who wants to save everyone. Well, that is not what Yahweh wants. Yahweh put a fence around the covenant. What did he have around the Garden of Eden?
Same thing.
It was walled off, wasn't it?
Protective enclosure.
Do you think that God wanted every human that was on the earth to come into the Garden of Eden?
Hardly.
If he had a wall around it? In fact, he stationed Moloch on that wall to make certain that no one got in. Think about it. The covenant is like Eden. There's a wall around Eden. There is a wall around the covenant because God wants to keep people out, not because he wants them in. Now, that's not to say he doesn't want some people in. You're willing to enter through the doorway that he has provided. You're willing to accept his conditions for entry. You know his name. You respect who he is. You understand what he is offering. You embrace what he expects. You're welcome. Come on in. Particularly if you've devoted yourself to being right about who God is and what he's offering. You're welcome. But that's one in a million. The other 999,999 have to be excluded. Because if they were not excluded, eternity would be far worse than life here is currently on earth.
And that's
far worse. That is saying something. Because we'd be far more powerful and far longer lived. It's one of the reasons when Jan was talking in the 9th, 10th, and 11th Mizmor, that it's really clear that God made us as long-lived and as powerful as we could be without it being counterproductive. He wanted us to be long-lived and sharp enough that we could get to know him if we wanted to, but not to the point where we could do ourselves and the world any more damage than we've already done. and in eternity. If God did build a wall around the covenant, if there was not a door to heaven and to his home, it would be filled with the scum that are currently corrupting and infecting the earth.
And they'd be on steroids.
Yep, that's correct.
It'd be unbelievable.
You know, I have been criticized a lot for suffering fools poorly, for not having patience with those who appear to be stupid. And I'm telling you that if you don't like my approach, you're going to hate God's. He is not going to spend his eternity and waste his time with stupid people. He made all of us smart enough to figure this out. And if you're not
too lazy,
it's your fault. You know, when we come to realize that Yahweh looked for a Yehudim to reveal his testimony and call his people home and couldn't find one, and resorted to a Goyim and friends and family of said Goyim. It's pretty damn pathetic. Because, you know, I know you two guys.
Mm-hmm.
You're good guys, but, you know, you're like me. There's really nothing uniquely special about either of you in terms of your intellect or capacity to write, nor is there any for me.
Mm-hmm.
No, we weren't chosen to do this because we're special.
Default comes to mind.
Yeah, we got this job by default.
We were willing
now,
to do
you,
it.
I want to tell you, I'm delighted. It's been wonderful.
I am too, man. It's good. Great.
Yeah. But we got this job by default because the people who should be doing it, who are really far
would have been a lot better at it.
Yeah, could have been a lot better at it, a far better place to do it. Weren't willing. No,
that's tragic.
Kirk, you're the one who says it time and time again. The bottom line is it takes the want to. If you don't have the want to, it ain't going to happen.
It's always the want to.
Yep.
Yeah. That's why volition exists. It's why choice exists. A little explanation, as I say, is necessary as we approach this. That the reason that there is a barrier around the covenant is because, and the reason that God is so upset about this is that barrier was torn down by Pauline Christianity and Roman Catholicism. Those religions were designed to be universal. That's what Catholic means.
Mm-hmm.
Roman universal. They wanted everybody to be part of their religion because that was more people to fleece and control. You know, there are popes that said, we have dominion over the entire world. All of its wealth, all of its people not only belong to us, we can dictate our will for them. So these things were designed to be that way. The covenant was designed to be exactly the opposite. It's not inclusive, it's exclusive.
Exclusive, yeah.
Yeah. The more people the Roman Catholic Church control, the better from their perspective and that of their sponsor, Satan. God doesn't want to control anyone.
All right, gave you free will.
That's right.
There's no command.
You are welcome in,
right,
but only if you accept the terms and conditions. And each of the five terms and conditions to enter Yahweh's home, they're not restrictive in the sense of being a burden.
Mm-hmm.
There are also benefits, all five of them. Now, for those paying especially close attention, La Ha'eretz, the phrase, was actually moved from the conclusion of the previous statement where it did not fit to the beginning of this one. There's no punctuation in Hebrew, and the wall, which typically denotes the beginning of a new thought, was not present, facilitating this particular decision. So if you're following along in some other translation, I want you to know that's why I took it from one place and moved it to another.
But it does.
It reads therefore. Yeah, it just flows better.
Yeah.
Within the land, La Ha Eretz, in conjunction with the rest of the earth, you have broken down and destroyed his entire sheepfold and all of its walls. Kol Gedereth, who? His is third person, masculine, singular. Who's Yahweh's shepherd? According to Yahweh. So when in the land, if you have torn down someone's sheepfold and there's one person and it is masculine, singular, whose sheepfold are we talking about?
Goats.
So within the land, you have broken down and destroyed his entire sheepfold and all of its walls. You have caused the undoing, the degradation, and the destruction, the demolishing and ruination to the point of despair by corrupting. Makah is from ma, to question, and chata, which means to miss the way. So you have caused the undoing and the degradation, the destruction of his fortifications. So this is to say that Yahweh wasn't the only one who put barriers around the covenant, the home. So did Dode. But, you know, Dode was a fighter. He was there to protect his family, his nation, his people, Israel. Now, as a rebuke of every religion, Yahweh has deliberately restricted access to his covenant, effectively keeping the religious and political out. Ignorant or averse to the five instructional terms that Yahweh has set as his conditions for entry, men like Akiba and Paul have sought to annul the Almighty's codicils. And they've made their own. And typically, participation is easy and encouraged, or at least in the side of Christianity. Participation by the rabbis is all-controlling. Every aspect of their lives is dedicated and constrained. Yahweh was the liberator, freed his people, and the rabbis are the taskmasters. They tied him and bound him into knots. Exactly the opposite. So participation in most religions is easy and encouraged, not with Judaism, making the religion more popular. And Judaism doesn't care that it's popular. And this is why the way is narrow and restrictive, which leads to life, and the path is wide open and broad, which results in death and destruction. I mentioned this before, but it bears repeating. The Garden of Eden had walls. Think about it. Why would the Garden of Eden have walls if Yahweh wanted to save everyone, if he wanted to love everyone, if he wanted to forgive everyone, if he wanted to have a relationship with everyone, if he wanted a big following? Why did the Garden of Eden have walls? Seriously, why did it have walls?
It has to keep them.
No other reason.
Right. Do you think that the walls of the Garden of Eden were to keep Adam and Chawa as prisoners?
Hardly.
To keep them safe.
It's protection. It's the sheep
from
that you protect
the scumbags
with the
outside. Right.
Mm-hmm.
The covenant is the same thing.
Yeah.
They were there to keep Adam and Chawa safe. Not locked inside as if they were prisoners, but in step instead to keep the rest of humankind out because they were religious and did not belong. During the millennial celebration of Sukkah, the final thousand-year expression of the Shabbat, year 6,000 Yah to 7,000 Yah, there will be far more souls excluded than included. And since the millennial Shabbat is a return to Eden, we should expect everything to be the same, which means that the vast preponderance of people will be kept out, while those who are invited in are kept safe. Dode and the covenant continue to be integrated, and they are indistinguishable, with the beloved upholding and representing the family, such that an attack on one is hostile to the other. This reads, all of those who pass this way plunder him. It has become such that he is scorned and abusively ridiculed by those who claim some affinity with him. You know, if you just go back, guys, I don't know, what, 20 years? The scholars were making the same claims about Dode David that they made about the Hittites. They say, you know, proof that the whole thing was myth, that the Hittites never existed. Mm-hmm. Oops. Hittite civilization was one of the largest, most successful civilizations in the archaeological record. And, of course, the same scholars didn't have the character to say, oops, we were wrong. Well, the same thing is about, you hear all of these idiots saying, you know, there's no proof there's ever was a person named Dode. They even say, you know, there was no example of written Hebrew that goes back anywhere close to that time. This whole thing is just a myth. Oh, well. Problem number one for that would be the Mishnah stone written in what's called Moabite, which I'm here to tell you is Hebrew. The words are all Hebrew. The grammar is all Hebrew. The alphabet is all Hebrew. And the Mishnah stone dates to what, about 950 BCE?
Yeah, about that.
And guess what it mentions? Both Yahweh's name and
Dode's
name.
Yeah.
And Mishnah, by the way, was expressly discussed in the among the prophets. And then you have this problem is about, I guess it was just a matter of a month or so ago. They were doing an excavation in around Israel, and they came up with a piece of pottery, and that piece of pottery dates to about 1050 BCE. It's written in Hebrew, and it makes a statement that parallels a statement that Yahweh made about treating people appropriately, particularly those with fewer rights than others. So you got a real problem here, and the more that they dig in and around Yisrael, the more verification that there was a city of Dode, that his home was there. So it's a fool's folly to do what the religious have done, to plunder him, to make such statements and saying that the whole thing was a myth. No.
Well, you know, if he didn't exist, these psalms, whoever wrote these psalms is one heck of a writer, isn't he?
Yeah, this particular psalm is...
I know this is written by someone else, but I mean, all the psalms of Dode are like...
This particular
who are you attributing
to,
if it's
Dode, not by Dode, but the inspiration for these words is Yahweh. And Yahweh was as you would say, Yahweh was a pretty heck of a good writer. So it is, this is Yahweh's tribute to his son. Yeah. 89th Mizmor. You know, the 119th Mizmor is Dode's tribute to the Torah.
Yeah.
The 19th Mizmor is Dode's summation of the purpose of the Torah. The 23rd Mizmor is Dode's expression of love for his shepherd, of one shepherd to another. The 22nd Mizmor is an eyewitness account of the shepherd's eyewitness account
of Pesach.
The Pesach lamb. You know, there are so many marvelous stories that are told about and through Dode. But this particular one is Yahweh's tribute to his son. This is Yahweh's expression of love and devotion to his Messiah. This is the one where God gets right in our face and has said, if all of this is not true about Dode, then you need to call me a liar. So, well, I don't know how the Christian apologists somehow say, well, you know, Dode's just a placeholder for Jesus. And every time God wrote David, he really meant Jesus. When God says, if this isn't about David, Dode, then you need to call me a liar. So what is the Christian calling God when they say this is not about Dode?
God meant to say what?
Really pathetic.
Just on the things that are stupid to do in life, calling God a liar is high up there. Now, there is something dumber than calling God a liar. Claiming to worship the God you are calling a liar.
A liar.
That's even dumber.
And then calling him the Lord.
Well, that's pretty dumb, too. Those who pass by this way, Abar again, the basis of Pesach, plunder him. Now, truthfully, they plunder Yosha, too.
Oh, yeah.
When you deprive Yosha of his purpose, which was to be the Passover lamb, when you have the Passover lamb experiencing rebirth and life as opposed to the Passover lamb enabling us to live, those who benefit
you've insulted the plan.
You have really. You have got it back afterwards, that is for sure. It has become such that he is scorned and abusively ridiculed. He's insulted by those who claim some affinity with him. They want to have an affinity with the young boy that threw the sling. I mean, we're constantly hearing about stories of David and Goliath. I'm here to tell you that is a tiny, tiny aspect of the story of Dode. It is an important one, though, because what was Goliath?
Being a Gabor.
He was a Philistine, wasn't he?
Oh, yeah.
Mm-hmm. And so who did Dode slay? The very people that are now falsely claiming the land. That's instructive. When you are with God, you are so empowered that with a single stone, the mightiest warrior of that time could be brought down by a young boy. That's like some idiot nincompoop goyim writing 18 books by translating Yahweh's testimony and saying, this is what it means to you. You're tremendously empowered if you're reliant. There's a lot to that story. You know, Dode didn't need a shotgun.
Or a big sword.
Yeah, or a big sword. Or a mighty army. Or a huge military. We're the best and finest military in the world. didn't need any of that. Just one stone. That'll be enough. There's so much to this. Claiming to have an affinity with David is common. His name appears in the New Testament, in the Talmud, and the Quran. Similarly, Christians, Jews, and Muslims with wholly contradictory belief systems all claim to be Abrahamic religions, even though they degrade Abraham's legacy. Claiming similar origins, their gods share nothing in common. Christians are particularly guilty, lugging the Old Testament with its tributes to Dode around with their new one. They claim affinity for the boy who slew the giant and who sang the 23rd Psalm, not knowing that Goliath was a Philistine and that it is Yahweh for whose namesake the 23rd song was written. Then, of course, in it, they blame Jews for all of their problems, and they must therefore deny that Dod was the most Yahud of all men. Even in the Quran, there is an entire surah devoted to Daud. The only problem is that this imposter was a Muslim and worshipped Allah. Confronted with the Dead Sea Scroll parchment memorializing the 89th Psalm, 1,000 years before the religion of Islam was invented, I wonder how a literate Muslim would react after seeing Yahweh's name rather than Allah's, 1,000 years before their religion was invented. Pretty hard to process that, isn't it?
Mm-hmm.
Many of those who pass this way ransack the covenant. They ridicule everything Dode represents by making it by taking it from him, giving it to themselves and others. They jeopardize countless lives by falsely claiming an affinity for either Dode or the covenant, and then advocating on behalf of their New Testament, their Talmud, or their Quran. And sadly, many of them have settled in proximity to Yisrael. Today, we know them as the practitioners of Judaism, Christianity, and of course, Islam. Speaking of the religious, whether they be pilgrims, refugees, crusaders, or jihadists, this is what God says. You have lifted up and exalted. No, mind you, this has been boom, 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 boom. Every statement that Yahweh has made from the 38th on is excoriating. Every statement is exposing and condemning. God isn't happy. He's disappointed. He's frustrated. He's angry. God is laying it on the line. You need to process what he's saying. He says, you have lifted up and exalted the upper hand of his foes and its adversaries, especially those who tried to constrain and limit him. You have caused all of those who demonstrate animosity toward him and rancor for it to be delighted. Now, I've a quick confession to make. Him and it here. The reason I have him and it is because of Yahweh's comments regarding the covenant. Just a couple of statements ago. And, saying, you degrade the covenant. And then he says, you denigrate Dode. Dode and the covenant are really coterminous. Dode is the living embodiment of the covenant, according to Yahweh. And so
that's fair.
Clearly, God is speaking of our degradation and the religious degradation of both the Dode and the covenant. And so I say he and it, when that's not technically possible because the covenant is feminine. Bereth is feminine and Dode is masculine. And the pronoun is a third person masculine singular. But since Yahweh has made this connection in this very Mizmor Psalm that Dod is the living embodiment of the covenant, the God's expression of the covenant, I still think it's appropriate. But understand that, you know, grammatically, you can make an argument against it. The thing, though, that is for certain is that this reinforces what I said earlier. It is by failing to acknowledge Yahweh's name, Yahusha's name, and that Dod is Yahweh's Mashiach, Messiah, that gave the upper hand to those who conceived and promoted Christianity. Had they not done that, the Romans would not have gained the upper hand. You know, if the children of Israel were Torah observant, as they were in Hezekiah's day, when the Assyrians, who were, far more ruthless foe than the Romans, came with 186,000, 185,000, whatever it was, soldiers, which was far more than the Romans brought legions. A legion is what, a few thousand men, you know, up to about 10,000 at the most, and the Romans brought two legions initially and a third later in both of those attacks. Both in 70 CE and then in 133. So you're talking about maybe at most 30,000 Romans. Mm-hmm. Well, there are 185,000 Assyrians.
Yeah, battle-hardened.
Battle-hardened, far more ruthless than even the Romans. And the Assyrians were not an army comprised of slaves. And that's what the Roman legions were for the most part. In the Roman legions, would go in and they would conquer a people.
Yeah.
And they'd say, you know, we got this program here. And this program is that every male that is capable of fighting is ours for the next 20 years. It not only deprives you of the ability to rebel against us, it gives us the ability to subjugate you. And so the Roman army was comprised of slaves. And the Assyrian army was comprised of Assyrians, 185,000 of them. And because Hezekiah and the people of Yahudah chose to be Torah observant and to celebrate Pesach, Matzah, and Bikurim, God simply wiped out all of those soldiers. So if the Israelites, particularly the Yehudim of 70 CE and again in 133, had done the same thing, it had been the Romans that would have all have died.
Mm-hmm.
It would have been a very different outcome. Yehudim gave the upper hand to their enemies and to Yah's enemies. I was once called an anti-Semite, which is kind of laughable, since the author of a bunch of anti-Islamic books that, you know, consider, I think he was became a Catholic, and what I wrote is that had Jews, rabbis, not sold Muhammad, readings from their Talmud, which Muhammad then could corrupt and twist to give his Quran some veil of credibility.
The Quran would have no credibility whatsoever.
The Quran would be so stupid, so devoid of anything worthwhile, so grotesquely immoral and stupid, that Islam would never have made it out of Mecca and Yathrib, Medina.
Mm-hmm.
And so I said, you know, the rabbis are partly responsible for the creation of this religion that has been so deadly to them. And he says, you know, that is means you're an anti-Semite. Well, I guess that would mean that God is an anti-Semite because he holds his people accountable, as he is right here. He says, you gave him the upper hand.
Yeah.
I think you're on solid ground when you convey what God conveys.
Yeah.
And God most certainly isn't against the name anti-Shem.
Hardly.
Hardly. It's so funny that people get all wrapped up in their underwear and Shemite because they'll say, you know, that Arabs are also of a descendants of Shem. But the reality is that it's the word Shem, it means name. Yeah, it means name. So an anti-Shemite would be those who are against Yahweh's name. And Yahudah and Yahudim, which means beloved of Yah.
Well, the only difference between Yahweh's name and Yahudah is the introduction of one letter, the D.
Yes. Yeah, and the Yahud is based on guess which name? Yahud is based on Yah and Dod.
Mm-hmm. Dod with a D, yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, that's it.
I look at the D now, the Dalet, more in two terms. I used to just look at it, okay, that's the Pesach door. It's Dode's name, too. I mean, I think it's absolutely, you know, like this is Dode. This is also the Pesach door. You can. It's like so many things we learn. You use all of the meanings. And you get
it's interesting. I should have mentioned this. I'm glad you just mentioned it, Kirk. Huh? You know, when God was complaining that that Christians have torn down the hedges around the sheepfold of the covenant. Well, there's a door. There's a door to that covenant family. DWD.
Mm-hmm.
You know, the D is a doorway.
Yes.
And there's two doorways. And Dode's name, why? Because you've got to have a door into God's home, and the door that to God's home is Pesach. Pesach is the doorway into the covenant and into heaven. And therefore, there's two D's in Dode's name. He is the door.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Ain't this great stuff?
No mistake.
I'm going to have to take that. Might be the hospital. Pardon me.
Okay.
Definitely take care of
it. Yes. For those that don't know, when we're recording JB, not broadcasting, Terry, Kirk's wife, has been in the hospital now, I guess, 6 weeks. She had a very large cancerous tumor removed from her abdomen, and you know they took part of her intestines and bowels and kidneys and stomach because the malignancy had metastasized into those organs. And unfortunately, the doctor sewed her back up incorrectly. And it's, you know, it can happen. You know, you have that much of a cancer that you're removing. And, you know, it's pretty hard to get everything stitched up the right way again. It speaks
to
really
complex. Thank God the doctor was willing to admit he made a mistake.
Yeah, he did.
Yeah, there's
he was
so
really,
much fear
apologetic.
Of that these days.
There's a
good chance the doctor would have ignored that and been, you know, tried to protect themselves.
No,
so
he admitted that he made the mistake. He apologized for it. He just laid himself open. And then he went to say, I'm going to get it resolved. And everything I'm told by Kirk, he did get it resolved. He got her put back together. Yep. And, she is finally now beginning to heal, and but she's still a long way from being out. You know, she went in with an inability to take antibiotics. You know, when you deal with those particular organs in your digestive tract, you've got tremendous bacterial problems, and she can't take antibiotics. So that's really, really difficult.
That's an extreme risk when you're in a hospital.
Yeah, and ultimately, when you have cancer that's metastasized, you don't never get all of it, and then afterward they've put you through chemo, and so it's this is a long go, and it's a long shot, and we're all very, very hopeful for Terry, who's a wonderful Covenant member and contributor to the Covenant, someone who have had with Kirk at my home and have come to know and really appreciate. And so we're hoping for the best, but we also recognize, and Kirk and I were really candid in our last conversations, that God promises a lot of things. But all the promises that he makes to us are about what he is going to do for us, what he's doing for us now, but what he's going to do for us, but that what he's doing for us is not to eliminate challenges. If he were to eliminate everything that can go wrong in our lives, we'd be worthless. We'd just be worthless. We wouldn't grow. We'd have a backbone. We wouldn't have any appreciation of who Yahweh is, what he's offering, why he's going about it this way. We need challenges. I don't think there's many men who have suffered as much heartache from a family perspective as Dode did. And yet he constantly celebrated his relationship with Dode, with Yahweh. He was challenged. Right. We have to be challenged.
If you're guaranteed an easy life, the choice is easy.
Yes. And so I just think that's important for all of us to remember, is that, God did not say that that if you choose to participate in the covenant, you're never going to have an ache and pain. You're never going to have a disease. You're never going to struggle. Everything with your family is going to be perfect. No, that would be ridiculous. What he did say is that if you'll prioritize your relationship with me such that you invest the time to observe what I have to say, to listen to what I have to say, to respect what I have to say and act upon it, then I'm going to make you immortal. I'm going to perfect you. I'm going to adopt you. I'm going to enrich and empower you. And every one of those things requires our transformation from physical beings with all of these limitations to spiritual beings. And so if there were no limitations to physical beings, what would be the benefit? So in a way, we ought to celebrate our limitations, because it is from them that we are being liberated. I know that's sometimes hard in the here and now, and I'm a complainer in this room. That's not the only thing I ever complain about. Is that I do. I mean, it must be most nights. I say, come on, yeah. I would certainly appreciate if you could resolve this, that, and the other thing for me, because I am really trying to be effective in my translations and in my commentary and in writing and in these programs. And gosh, it would be so much easier and more effective if we could just move past these distractions. I really appreciate if you could resolve, not for selfish reasons, for collectively beneficial reasons. So I do.
This is for both of us.
Yes, for both of us. I'm not trying to be selfish here. I would appreciate the help.
I think I said that a couple of times this week.
I know. And we do.
Honestly, I think it's human nature. We thrive in adversity.
Yeah.
We do our best when we're under pressure.
That is correct. That's when we grow.
Yeah.
We grow when we're under pressure. We thrive. We develop character and backbone.
It's adaptation.
Yes. And we show ourselves as credible. That was one of the things that I learned a long time ago, when I didn't want to do the radio programs because I knew my diction wasn't all that good, and that I can read Hebrew, but I'm not a good Hebrew speaker, and that I knew that scholars, both Christian and Jewish scholars, well, back when I was exposing the Quran, Islamic scholars, knew more than I did. And I was going to have to rely on two things. The fact that I understood these texts better than they did.
Mm-hmm.
And that I was reliant on the creator of the universe. And so those two things said, okay, you can do this.
That's two
good
things
just
to have
fine.
On your side.
Right. Understand your limitations. Go out there and do this. Because understanding trumps knowledge, and knowledge trumps faith. And that ultimately, if you're reliant on Yahweh, then there is no limit to what you can accomplish. And so I put away my fears and recognized that the various challenges of this, putting oneself in a challenging situation. You know, we don't rehearse these programs.
Mm.
We just we share what we know.
Yeah.
We share what we know. And the courage and the confidence to do that is to a large degree what makes them credible. Our willingness to admit when we've been wrong is what makes them credible.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah, absolutely.
We do it out of a sense of passion. Oh, and of course, the great financial reward because of the enormous contributions. Of...
I didn't get that.
The feeling you get at the end of every year. Yeah,
who is collecting the donations?
What a reward.
Yeah, in the entire time we've been doing this, I think my good friend Yoel had somebody that made a donation. It was a small amount of money, and that it went to do something that Dode was doing in terms of not Dode, but Yoel was doing to. Expand the online presence of one of the books. So I think in the last 18 years, $100 of what I've probably spent is $100,000 on sharing, buying the tools to do this, and then sharing what I've learned.
Well,
I think I've had $100,000 expenditure
and I'll
be offset by $100. It didn't even go to me. Yeah, even by the way, you know, all of these books are available at either Clariter's or at Amazon. You can go to Amazon and Google my name, or not Google, but put in my name or yada yada, and you'll see all of these books for sale. Yeah, and you know, they're I don't know, they're the least expensive. I think is $3. That would be written in stone. And the most expensive, I don't know what is, $14 or $15 at the most.
Cost of printing.
This is the cost of printing. Yes.
Yeah, some of the bigger ones, like Clariter's, get up to like $20.
Yeah.
They're worth it.
Yeah.
And
so that's literally just covering the publication cost.
Sure.
That is, you know, the royalty to me on those books is zero.
Zero.
And that's as it should be. I'm not heck, the contribution, the benefit I've received by doing this is the most rewarding, most uplifting, most enjoyable thing I've done in my life. Nothing compares to this. So I'm
even the Amazon ones, I think the guy who put them on there makes a penny per purchase because Amazon sets a minimum standard.
Mm-hmm.
Yes, he's selling them at the
absolute
minimum Amazon will allow him.
Yeah, I think if you were to amortize that over the time that he has spent preparing these books for the publication there, that he is...
a penny a year.
Yeah, there you go. A lot of the books on Amazon are actually selling quite well, that's good news.
Absolutely.
I'm pleased that is the case, and
Well, I have to have one little confession I have to make before we. I did get a gift. Someone sent me a gift. And it was Jackie sent me her theological workbook of the Only Testament. And it is marvelous. It is hardcover. It is marvelous.
That is
I
a
carry
great
like a toy.
Utility right there.
Yeah, it is.
The first thing I looked
you
up.
Know, what I use the theological word book for is one thing. There's one thing that is extraordinarily effective at doing. And, JB, you use it. What do you use it for? Let's see if we're similar.
I like it for the etymology. It gives you the origin of the word and how it evolved into – yeah, the way it is used most commonly.
Yeah, that's not the way that I use it because the for roots of words I use Strong's. Actually, mostly I do my own at this point, but previously I had used Strong's. And for definitions, the what's called the BDL is
BDL,
the easiest for definitions. Now I use. The theological word book of the Only Testament, to quote Kirk, is that it is when you're tracing down a word that is either uncommon or the definition is complex or it has a dark and light side, it does the best job of presenting the words in a concordance type format where it will say, this word is used.
Yeah.
This was so important on Zoroa, for example. It'll say this word is used in this conjugation or this stem, mostly this stem, to convey this thought in these places. And then it conveys this thought in these places. And you can research the definition of a word not based upon man's interpretations, but God's own explanation.
How it's used.
By using it. So that's how I use it.
I can't agree more. That is great. To be able to go to those instances where it's used that it points to and look at how it was used is invaluable.
Yep. I love it for that purpose. There's things about it that I really dislike. For example, in the first paragraph on every word, they will give you the Arabic. And you go, you idiot!
Arabic is a derivation of
Hebrew,
not precursor.
Yeah.
Right. Arabic is Hebrew 3,000 years after the fact.
Right, right.
It's bastardized Hebrew.
It was not
almost 3,000 years after the fact. Right.
Yeah.
I mean, I don't mind if you say this is the meaning of the word in Aramaic because Aramaic was very early derivative of Hebrew. And so that part of the languages, the early languages and what the words meant and other languages that were written the same way. That part's good, except, you know, just when I see the Arabic, I go, good God, you are stupid. You know, how could you be that ignorant? But nonetheless, you know, scholars are as scholars are. So that's what they do. They know what they don't understand.
They play to the audience. Yeah.
I guess they play to the audience. And then, of course,
I'll agree with you on that one. I love that aspect of it. But I still do love, not like I said, not for word derivation, but it will get into one of the things I think Kirk brought up a long time ago that was one of the most profound things we've ever talked about is the concrete nature of Hebrew language.
Yeah.
And the theological word book will talk about what the concrete nature of the word was and how it came to have these abstract connotations.
Yes.
And I love reading that part of it and seeing how this concrete idea evolved into this abstract idea, and it helps you understand the abstract idea so much better.
Yeah, but you do need to be careful because the theological word book is probably the most religious of all of the lexicons we use. It is the most religious.
It tries to defend the religious translations at every chance.
It's just.
But once you get past that, it's great.
But
if you apply your filter.
Right. You've got to use these tools in an appropriate way. And you know, I read an article that was sent to me this week by about somebody who had spent the last like 30 years of their lives writing a translation of the Bible. And you know, this person had like three words they wanted to say that they translated differently. One was nephesh. They said nephesh is life's breath rather than soul. Ah, come on, that's silly. Yeah, nephesh is breath, and ruach is wind, but ruach is mostly spirit, and nephesh is mostly soul. One describes conscious. I mean, the soul is consciousness. All animals have consciousness, the ability to see and respond, observe and respond. And he had a couple of other words that we have discussed on this program. And you know, one was the word that Deshin that is used in the 23rd Mizmor Psalm to say that, you know, he anoints my my head with oil. And he said, well, it's not really anoints, it's luxuriate. And you're going, oh, come on.
Give me a...
Yeah. Oh, God.
That sounds like a sales pitch for someone.
Just go and you say, this point I've made many, many, many times, and it drives to the heart of using these lexicons, which is the single most important thing that one must have to be able to effectively translate Yahweh's testimony.
Understanding.
You know what that is?
Understanding.
Pardon?
Understanding.
Yeah, understanding is helpful.
You understand his program. I know what he wants and what he says.
Yes. In the sense
it always
of
applies.
You need to know Yahweh and understand who he is.
Yeah.
That's first and foremost. If you don't know Yahweh and understand who he is, Don't even attempt it.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's first and foremost. You've got to know who Yahweh is and what he is offering, what he expects in return, what he loves, what he hates. And then from there, you can translate. And that's what enables you to have the religious filter.
Of all the books you've read, an introduction to God is the most important for anyone who's actually interested in translating on their own. An introduction to God gives you that basis. It gives you all the tool set you need. That is, if you're looking to start translating, read that book first.
Yeah, it's true. That book was devoted to giving people the tools such that they could do all of this on their own. And we encourage that. I mean, JB, I know you spend a lot of time translating, and you have a wonderful site, Yahweh Bereth, that presents your translations and your commentary as well as my translations and my books and commentary and these in these shows. And when you do that, there's very few things that are more rewarding. It is it is truly a great joy to translate and to learn. And the only thing I find that is more enjoyable than translating and learning and coming to understand is sharing it.
Yep.
Or what would be the point? Once you know, you know. And if you keep learning things and you have no one to share it with, well, what do you do with it?
How can you come to know all this and not want to share it?
Share, yeah.
Right.
That's what we do.
I mean, that's just your first instinct is, how can I share this with everyone I know?
I did, and they all said, what?
It is, by the way, our purpose. When Yahweh created the universe, from that point on, he made a decision. And it's a decision that's very difficult for most people to comprehend, because why would dunderheads like us have a job? Why would we have a job? God is so vastly smarter and more capable than we are, more articulate than we are. Why do we even have this job? And
because he enjoys
the reason
working
is really simple. He created the universe to experience working with and enjoying the company of, interacting with his family.
Yeah.
With his sons and daughters. And so everything that he can do through us and with us, he does through us and with us. He didn't go into Mitzrayim, Egypt, alone. He certainly could have, but he went in with Moshe. He didn't need to establish a united Yisrael with somebody, but he did it with Dod. He didn't need to speak through a prophet like Yashayah or a kid like Yirmiyah, and yet he did. He didn't need me to translate his testimony from ancient Hebrew into the lingua franca of the world today, the language spoken by more Jews than any other, English.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
But he doesn't want to do anything alone. He could have done everything
alone.
God
can do anything he wants, but where's the fun? Where's the fun in doing any of it on your own?
What's the purpose?
He called himself Father.
He created the universe and conceived life and offered the covenant because he wants to have a family. And once you have a family, you want to engage with your family. You want to enjoy your family. You want to work with your family. You want to share with your family. You want to camp out with your family. And that's what God does. And that's what gives all of us the opportunity to enjoy his company and to work with him. It's that simple. God has the patience to work with us, to work through us, as inferior as we may be, because when we get it, when we learn something, when we share it, he's excited. Yeah. It's what he wants. And I would encourage everyone to take advantage of it. It's the best thing you can possibly do.
Every little bit you can do.
Yeah. Kirk, you know, you had a...
Regardless of how small of a role you may play, it's amazing to be part of any of it.
Mm-hmm.
You've had a tough month, Kirk. It's been a challenging month, right?
Oh, yeah.
And yet, what have you done during that month that has brought you joy?
Well, it's two things. Obviously, being able to be of some support to my wife. She's going through horror, quite frankly. And but I've enjoyed my respite from all of that is being able to steal out some time to sit down and look at what Yahweh had to say and enjoy what he had to say and then be able to maybe offer something in these conversations that we have every Friday. So I mean, that's just and that'll probably be my life no matter what happens, one way or the other, as if I get older and sicker or whatever,
or if
things
too.
Change in, you know. But I love this. I truly do. I just it spurs me on every week. I say, okay, well, that's enough now. Take some time off. And it was like before I did the little stuff on the commentary that we were talking about to see what they came up with on 89, I wrote about two pages, which I'm probably going to type up and send it for your perusal what I started listening to and reading some of the guys who write lexicons and their commentary on Yahweh's name, because I know what's coming in chapter 5, at least part of it. And I was listening to them, and the arguments are just ridiculous. They are. I understand what they're saying, and I wrote down what they say, and why they're saying it, but they missed the whole point. It's like, I'll give you a quick synopsis. Names mean character, and I agree with that. You know, and Abraham's name meant something, Yishak, laughter, and so forth and so on. Even Ishmael actually means to question this man's relationship with El, God. If you think about it, he's got the Ma in the middle, Ishmael. So all those things really mean something, but I can't talk to you.
That's really interesting. I never even thought about that. Ish is individual. Ma means to question. L,
so
individual who questions
relationship
God.
With God, which is adversarial.
In this particular case. Isn't that interesting?
Yeah. So, I mean, those are those, so, yes, I understand all the character of what Yahweh's name means. But ultimately, Moshe gave the clue. He said, what's your name? So I know what
yes.
to call you. Then I'll build a relationship with you. But let me at least start with what your name is.
Right.
And he told him his kid. You know, so he understood. It's okay, and there is a way to say it. And the R is the R at the end on the hay, and the, you know, and so, come on, you really scholars, they're all defending each other's why they won't do what's right.
Right.
You know, instead of doing what's right. And I listen to them and I read the stuff and I'm saying, you guys just don't get it. And you're so smart. I mean, you know stuff. You know a lot more than I know. What is wrong with you?
Yeah, but you can't figure it out. Dode sang Yahweh's name, sang to Yahweh, and included Yahweh's name in the lyrics of his songs.
Mm-hmm.
You'd have to ask, who knew Yahweh and his name better? The theologian that's explaining that it can't be pronounced or Dode that sang it?
Well, easy. Dode.
Who did
Dode.
Yahweh call right?
Yeah, Dode.
Who did Yahweh call my son? Dode. Who did Yahweh call the Messiah? Dode.
Mm-hmm.
Not the godforsaken scholar.
No.
That tells you that
the
best way
to
respect Yahweh's name is to never say it.
Yeah. That's just bizarre.
Or that
but
we don't know how to pronounce it. Is how could you not know how to pronounce it when it's written with the same 22 letters as every other Hebrew word, none of which you have a problem pronouncing?
Correct.
I mean, everybody knows that with it's been 5 minutes of this, that Yahweh said that his name was based upon Haya, the Hebrew word meaning to exist.
Mm-hmm.
And in Haya, isn't there a Y and an H?
Mm-hmm.
In fact, there's two H's
and a
Y and Haya, just like there's a Y and two H's in Yahweh's name. The
exactly.
only letter in Haya the only letter in Yahweh's name that isn't in Haya is the Y.
Well, Torah.
Yeah, why don't you take the book where Yahweh teaches us everything we need to know, including his name, is Torah, and recognize that the O in Torah is from the Wah.
Yeah.
Hello? Shalom, which is the single most commonly repeated Hebrew word of all time, the O in Shalom is from the Hebrew Wah. This
mm-hmm.
isn't hard. It's obvious.
Well, I will tell you that Jay
was right
earlier. I hate
to leave out early, but I've got a baby girl who is asking for her.
All right. Yeah, we're all
going to
say good night to
yeah.
yeah, we're going to say good night.
Yeah.
Thank you,
if
JB.
If you guys want to keep going, that's fine, but
yeah.
my daughter's calling
no,
for me.
We're going to say good night, too. And,
us too, yeah. Good night,
JB. Finish your thought, though, Kirk.
Good night.
No, I was just saying, JB, when you were talking about
good night,
people need to have a scholar. They seem to ask, even on these tapes I was listening to, as well as some of the things that I read, they seem to want to. They're so insecure, they want to go to a scholar and say, what do you think about this? How do you say the name? And then they'll grab onto what he says, as opposed to use the Nesama, which is one of the five gifts Yahweh gave us, as I think about them. You know, there's life, and then there's mortal life, of course, and then free will, and an Asama, and then the Torah he gave us, and then he gave us the language. He gave you all the tools to figure it out. I may need some help in hand, like any good teacher, but I want them to be teaching me what Yahweh said, like you do, and then okay, that makes sense. Now I can go. Now I can look it up, and then I have a brain. I can figure this out. He doesn't talk down to me to such a degree that he doesn't talk so high on such a high level that Kirk can't understand it.
Right.
Yahweh is very good about it. He knows what his target is, who his people are.
Yeah, he knows his target audience.
The
beauty of the target audience is that his message, it is a concrete language.
Mm-hmm.
With symbolic meanings.
Yes.
And so it is a language where, because of the richness of it, where at, right at the surface, you garner all you need to know to appreciate who Yahweh is, what he's offering, and what he expects in return. Mm-hmm. And yet you can read those same words and observe them more closely and gain an infinite amount more.
Exactly.
It is.
It's been my experience.
Yeah, every time that we study the same statement, every time we retranslate it, we learn so much more. It's like difference between writing these books, like the chapter we're going over, I wrote mm-hmm. some time ago, and they are extemporaneous and impromptu comments on what the words mean when we go through it now.
Yes.
We're always coming up with far more than we did the previous time. And if we were to do it again, the same thing would happen.
Find some more. We'll absolutely find some more.
Yeah, there's an infinite amount that you can learn. But just the base of it is more than sufficient to get from where we are to where God is. Yes,
absolutely.
We can develop a relationship on the basics, and then we can spend a lifetime
enjoying
growing
our relationship
and learning.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah.
Totally agree.
Yeah.
Totally agree.
Yeah. Yep. And words are just so marvelous. I think words are the building blocks of everything, of knowledge, of understanding, of communication, of relationship.
Truly. Yeah.
Words are extraordinary things. We should value them, particularly when they're God's. Well, Kirk,
yes.
I'm going to say good night. We're going to be cut off here momentarily anyway.
Okay.
I'm glad that Terry has made a turn for the better and that you were able to join us. We'll be with you again next week.
It's
May
a
God
pleasure.
Bless.
Shalom. Shabbat shalom.
Good night. Good night.
Night.